Okay, we're live and ready for you guys.
Okay, good morning, Morro Bay. This is Steve Allen. I'm the chair of the Tourism Business Improvement District Advisory Board. Today is Thursday, the 16th of April. It is now 9:04. Before we establish a quorum, I just want to let callers know if you'd like to speak during the general public comment period. The comment period for specific agenda item, please use the following call in number 1-818-794-7004. Show is pound 2607. Guest pin is pound 464192. Again, show pound 2607. Guest pin pound 464192. When you call in, you'll be put in a queue until we open it up for public comment, and each speaker will be allowed 3 minutes for their public comment. So with that, I will go ahead and take roll. Board Member Sulu, Joan?
I'm
just
here.
State that you're here. Okay.
Yeah,
thank
I had
you.
To unmute. Thanks. I'm here.
Got it. I don't believe Chris Kosteka is here. Nancy Dickinson. Terry Innes. Hi, Terry. Amish Patel.
Here.
And Isaac Sue.
Here.
Great. So, Jen, we do have a quorum. Great. Okay. Without saying, this past month has been one of the most challenging, you know, I've been through it, you know, from the pandemic with COVID-19 on the health side, but then as a business owner, it's just been unprecedented what we've dealt with in terms of employees. It couldn't have happened at a worse time. You know, we make our way through the winter and then we all look forward to spring break and, you know, that driving revenues. So this darn pandemic is just hard all the way around, especially for the business community. So before we get started, let's take a moment of silence and just reflect on the past month and what we're going to accomplish this morning. Okay, thank you, everybody. I guess we're going to go ahead with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America.
America.
It stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
That was kind of cool.
That was weird.
I'm going to put a flag up on the screen or something. So board member announcements. I did, you know, want to start off by thanking everybody, especially the staff, Jen, Heather, Dana, Scott, for helping put together this meeting and for, you know, everything they've done in the past month just to keep the city functional. Without saying the first responders on the front line of this crisis, we need to acknowledge. I looked up as of last night, April 15th, San Luis Obispo County had 124 cases confirmed of COVID-19. Great news is that the curve definitely appears to be flattening. Morro Bay, as of last night, there were 6 confirmed cases. That is the fewest reported cases in any city or town in San Luis Obispo other than Pismo at 5, making Morro Bay one of the safest communities in the county and the state for that matter. We also appreciate and acknowledge the show of support from the city council in delaying the late fees for TOT for February and March. And again, I just want to recognize the business owners that have been impacted during this crisis, and you know, we'll do everything we can to address their concerns, and you know, this too shall pass. So are there any other board announcements? Okay, seeing none. How about staff announcements?
I'm gonna kind of go through just basically what we've been doing over this last month. Kind of, I think you guys have seen my emails, but I wanna just, if you can enable my screen host so that I can share my screen. I don't know if that's, probably AGP does that, right?
I think you just like
that green button. It says host disabled attendee screen sharing.
Oh.
Jen?
Yeah.
You can actually share your screen at the bottom. There's a green arrow.
I'm hitting it and it says host disabled attendee screen sharing.
Oh, okay. So AGP is going to have to enable that.
Well, I'll start going through things and we'll see if they can fix that or not. Okay.
Yeah, we are fixing that right now. If you want to just go through okay. And we'll have that for you.
Sure. Thank you. So just, I'm going to kind of go through what we've been doing since day one this started. Obviously it's just been a really evolving situation. And so as you remember back, the very first thing, we were not at shelter at home yet. So we placed out the temporary wash stations around downtown and the waterfront. We put them where we felt we were missing, you know, wash stations. And oh, here it's sharing my screen now. Yay. Can you see my slides?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've been teaming up with the chamber on quite a few things. So the first thing we did was we initiated calling all the restaurants to find out if they're going to do to go or delivery. And then we coordinated that with the transportation office, who Janine Burlingame is managing a Google document on the city website. It's basically a living document. So as restaurants come and go, we can change that and anybody can access that in town to see who's currently on that sheet. And then we did a similar one for markets as well. And both of those have been received very well. We created the curbside signs, as you know, that are outside the restaurants. And that uniformity, we've gotten a lot of good feedback that everybody's really appreciated that uniformity. And we've been hearing countywide that they really feel Morobay was really on it before a lot of other towns in the county. So we were thrilled to hear that. And Chamber has like really done a ton of work. So kudos to them for everything they've been helping with. We terminated our contract with Metal Marketing and our social media contract with Rock Harbor Marketing. Both those very tough decisions, but it was the right thing to do. We just really needed to stop any of the expense that was going out. And even with canceling all the advertising, still their monthly fees were quite a bit. So we wanted to harness all that money and put it in the bank as fast as we could. So they were really gracious and they did not require a 30-day notice, which is what their contract says. They just did immediate termination with no 30-day fees, which, I mean, I was thrilled that they did that. So that has been paused. We've paused all of the ads and all of the contracts that were in place. They did not charge us any cancellation fees. They've just, I guess they've done that for every DMO because this is so wide ranging. They've just let everybody step off their contracts. And hopefully at some point we'll be able to get back to those. I don't know, you know, when that'll be. We'll just take a day at a time as we see things change. We do have our Google AdWords still in place, and that gives us the ability to watch travel sentiment and see what the data is as far as people rebuilding and when they want to start traveling again, which is really important to stay close to. We started doing a daily live feed on the Morobay Facebook page. I don't know if any of you have seen that. We do it in the morning. Not today because I'm sitting here with you guys, but we do it in the morning, and then we do it usually at sunset. And we're getting really good response on that. We're getting usually between 8,000 and 18,000 people watching those live feeds. And they are thrilled. I mean, they are loving the idea that it's live because they can see, you know, what's really going on there. They're stuck at home and it gives them great hope to see, you know, that Morobay is here and beautiful as always. And I think it's been a really nice change instead of, you know, showing them like our glossy videos that we normally do. It shows that we're, you know, real kind of idea. We laid off Liz. Tomorrow is her last day. So she will no longer be helping. So you'll have to just send things to Megan and I. We're just trying to split up all of the work that's usually goes through her. And we've also stopped all of our freelance contracts with our photographer and our designer. And so those are stopped. We've reduced down what we're doing for SEO as well. We've been doing one-on-one sessions with different media outlets that we are under contract with, or we're under contract with, like Adara and TripAdvisor, and kind of staying close to them. They're doing a lot of really great research and showing kind of what the market is doing. So that's going to be very helpful when we start coming out of this. And I'll talk about that a little later in our meeting as well. I'm sitting on quite a few different task force. So SoCal has set up a couple different task force, and I'm involved in the events task force. There's also a PR task force that I'm involved with on the county side. And then there's a think tank that's been created for VCA by Carl Roboto that did our strategic planning. And so myself and Dana from Paso Robles are sitting on that for our county. And that's more about what is social distancing going to do as far as changing tourism in the future. And then the SoCal Economic Recovery Team, we meet once a week, and we're really, that's a kind of a meshing of looking at every DMO and making sure that we're all kind of coordinating and doing kind of the same thought patterns as far as opening or closing different things. And then I also am part of the EOC with our executive staff here in Morro Bay, managing tourism, and also on the economic recovery part with Scott Graham's team. So that's what we're up to. That's all I have. That's enough.
No, thank you, Jen.
Yeah, no problem.
Any other staff announcements? Okay, seeing none, I believe we want to open it up for public comment period, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
No public comment.
No public comment. Okay, moving on here. Can I get a recommendation to approve is submitted the consent agenda?
Can we ask Jennifer questions on her, are we allowed to do that, Jennifer or Heather? Can somebody tell me?
Of course.
I was just curious, on your last slide, it showed the list of all the things that you're doing, and it talked about the county. Has the county talked about at all yet about how driven we are as a county, and especially as have we talked with city staff about how our economy is really driven around some of the major events that we have and the impact of, for example, I don't know, maybe, everything's been canceled. The next thing that would come up would be the Avocado Margarita Festival. That's a really, really packed festival. And has the county talked at all tourism about the social distancing events and how that impacts the overarching economy, pushing down even towards Morro Bay based on the fact that those events are going to look significantly different, especially ticketed events?
Right. They have started talking about it, and there's not a cohesive answer yet, Joan. I have a feeling, it sounds like from the governor's office, we're not going to be having any mass groupings for quite a while. And as I was mentioning to Scott Collins, I mean, the good part of that is that it's every DMO. It's not just Morro Bay. So it's not like we're not having our events now that can go to Paso Robles. I mean, everybody is impacted across the board. How do we react to that and grow those dates back in is a different thought pattern. But most likely those events are going to move off for a year completely is my gut. And that'll be a question for, I don't know that Chamber's ready to give you any decision on that yet, but I know that a lot of that will come from the governor's office on what he's going to allow them to do.
Yeah, and if I may add that, sorry, hey everybody. We don't know, Joan, your specific question about the impact to us versus others in terms of loss of revenue on events. We know events play a big part of our overall tourist strategy. So I would just say, we'll suffer from that. But as Jen mentioned, it's going to be an across the board approach. You know, unless cities want to do further, you know, be further restrictive than what the county and the state is going to allow. We are working on a reopening strategy with the county, and we will be reaching out to a few hoteliers, a few retailers, restaurateurs, and others in the business community in partnership with the chamber to provide some guidance from the economic side to the county when about the reopening. There's no timeline for reopening. The governor has been very, very clear about that. He has outlined six criteria by which he'll be looking at do that. And a lot of that is around having mass testing capabilities, being able to deal with a surge, and being able to shut the economy down once more if things surge. And so he's calling it the dimmer, not an on-off switch, which means a very slow incremental return to normalcy. And he said in his statements, you know, a year or two potentially of no large events, which I don't know how you have sports. I don't know how you have schools. I don't know how you have any kind of thing that we are typically seeing, you know, like Avocado Margarita Festival or Harbor Fest or any of those large events. But that'll be across the board in the entire state in Oregon and Washington because it's a tri-state pact. And we see that a lot of regions are sort of forming together to be on the same page. So I know that doesn't answer your question great in its full capacity, but ultimately we are at the mercy of social distancing and opening slowly so we don't have to close back down again and suffer even more.
I sit on the program committee of the Bird Festival, and we've been talking about this a lot with the Bird Festival. In fact, we've just on Tuesday voted to extend the Bird Festival by one day by doing master classes that start on Thursday. And so we're putting those together. And but the discussion is all how can we go forward in creating events that don't have social distancing baked into them right from now, with the understanding that we're going full steam ahead in planning the Bird Festival as even a larger event, with the idea that some of these things may have to be reinvented in using, for instance, the masterclass being so that people can sit at tables far apart, that things happen outside so that people aren't gathered around one person. I mean, especially for the Bird Festival, I think there's all sorts of creative ways that we can come up with to bake social distancing in it. And as testing, as new ways, I mean, we're even discussing things like maybe people have to have their temperature taken before they enter the festival, you know, or maybe there's some kind of immediate testing that people have. So we're talking about everything. And with the understanding of trying to go forward with creating these new experiences that kind of have this baked in, so that if we can run a healthy event and we get support from the city and from the state to run a healthy event, that we're making sure that we're thinking about these things now, with the understanding that we may go full steam ahead and plan everything and still have to cancel. So that's all part of the discussions that are going on with the Bird Festival.
Well, that's great that you're doing that. And that's ultimately what we're talking about here is a city providing input back to the county. The public health officer is going to make the decision, not us, but I'm encouraged by the fact that they are asking for our input and want to be smart about it and understand the economic side of this. Public health comes number one by far margin over the economics, but we have to balance those two as much as we can and be pragmatic about how to reopen and how to do it effectively. And the thoughts that you just threw out there, Nancy, is perfect. That illustrates exactly what we're trying to do. And we should probably have a good idea of how events could be reopened or allowed.
I mean, we've even talked about it could be a 100% outside bird festival, you know, and it could be scaled down to make sure that we're not bringing too many people into Morro Bay. It could be, we're talking about everything.
The other interesting thing for events on the county side is the discussion has been, this might be our opportunity to really reset all of our events countywide. There's always been this conflict of overlapping large events in multiple communities, and maybe this is an opportune time to really step back and look at where do we need real lift, you know, in our hotels, and is it in early September, or should we maybe look at whenever that comes back, should it be more of an area that we really need lift, you know, after the first of the year or something like that. So there's discussions about that as well, that the county really wants to hopefully really unilaterally look at all events and see if we can get all the major events in the county working kind of cohesively so they're not overlapping, and really put them on weekends that would impact hotels more than what they currently are, you know, get off of summer events. Some, I know we don't do that, but some towns do summer events and really try to, that's what they're really hoping to do. I don't know that it'll completely happen, but that's their intention. And I like that. I think that's a really good way to be relooking at events.
Great. Super. Any other questions for Jen? Okay. Seeing none, we will move on to our consent agenda. Do we have a recommendation to approve the submitted?
Joan, you're on mute.
I'd like to pull A2, which is the occupancy TOT report, so that we can discuss that. And then I'll recommend A1 for approval.
Okay. Just a reminder, everybody, please take yourself off mute when you speak. I think you automatically go on to mute, if I'm not mistaken.
Did you get that? I'd like to make a motion to approve A1, but pull A2 for discussion.
Got it. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Jen, can we just start with A1?
Sure, go ahead. What do you want to discuss?
No, I was pulling A2, the transient occupancy report. I made a motion to approve A1. And Amish, I think, seconded it, so we just need a vote on A1.
Okay, all in favor of approving A1? Maybe just raise your hands.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Great, so let's move forward with the February TBID meeting minutes are approved.
Steven?
Yes.
I can't see Nancy, so if I'd like a voice, if we do any voting, this is Heather.
Okay.
So if we can do some voice when we do our motions.
Nancy, we lost you there. Do you have your visual? Can you get it back on? You're muted too, Nancy. Can you hear me? Okay, well, we might have lost her. I don't know how she voted on that. So do you need something further with that?
I'm not sure if she stepped away.
This is AGP. Settings look good on our end. I think you need to share it from your end.
Nancy, can you hear us?
AGP, are you able to unmute her?
There
you go.
She is.
Nancy, can you unmute yourself?
I'm sorry, I had to step away for 1 minute. So okay. What was the question?
They just took a vote, and we were unable to hear you.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Okay, you were going to ask, when we take votes, we need to hear voices and not raise hands, so I can hear how everyone voted.
Okay.
So Nancy, the recommendation was to approve A1 and pull A2, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound good?
Okay, I approve.
Okay, sounds good.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
And I'm moving on to A2.
A2, so February TOT and year-over-year report.
Yeah, so I have a couple of things, and I know you all know that I really do take a hard look at the TOT report. now that we've now that we're going to be cutting costs, and I'm not sure Jennifer can probably answer this in a minute, if the Adara contract is gone, we really need to, this along with any of our Google Analytics for our website are going to be our lead indicators as to what's happening in our marketplace. And we had a subcommittee, and I don't remember who was on the subcommittee, to redo the TOT report and make it more, to have the data reflect more of what the needs of the board and the community are. So I just want to point out the STAR report on this. If you look at the STAR report, we don't include Morro Bay's STAR numbers in here, because typically what happens with STAR is that it's only a percentage of our hotels, and it's a smaller percentage of our hotels in this community than it is in the communities where they have larger hotels, because hotels above like 30, 40 rooms, typically, if they have a flag or not, they typically buy into STAR so they can have the report. But if you look at this, where I'm really concerned is that we had a 47% occupancy in February of 2019, a 42% in 2020. And North County is a good comparison to Morro Bay because that's got Cayucas in there. And their ADR is running significantly higher than our actual ADR, which would trend up from a STAR TOT. When you look at overall San Luis Obispo County on the STAR report, which is the bottom line there, that's everybody cumulative. That has Morro Bay's numbers in it, throwing those numbers down. So Morro Bay is also included in there. And we, in February, were already trending down. We have now, with COVID-19, we have even further to get back up on par to where we were than almost anybody else in the county as a municipality or an entity. So I just want us as a board to start really, if we're going away from having Adara and stuff, to really consider what's happening with our comp set and stuff. As we move back, we should be moving back with them, just like a wagon train, all the horses run together, right? So we should be moving back on a lateral field with them. However quick or slow that might be, we should be doing that with them. So I'm hoping that this month the subcommittee will get back together. Now, we were waiting for Terry to join the board so that we could get input on the TOT report from vacation rentals. And we've onboarded vacation rentals. We've got a great vacation rental representative on the board. So I'm hoping that we can get back together as a subcommittee. And I don't remember who was on that subcommittee with me, because we met way back waiting for vacation rentals to come on. I'm hoping that we can get some better data for this board to have better measurements and to help Jennifer and the community along. Because what happens here is really reflective on what's going on in our retails and in our restaurants. So it's super important that we have the best data that we can consume here to push the marketing and drive whatever we're going to do to try and get our economy back. That's all I want to say about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Joan. That's all good information. You know, I would guess when this is all said and done, there's going to be across the board cuts to staff. So that would be my only concern. You know, how many man hours are going to be available to look at things like this, you know, from TBID, from the city, from hoteliers, all the above. But, okay, any other comment on A2? So can we approve A2?
So moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Amish. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Moving on to our business items. Roundtable discussion. Jen, do you want me to kind of present on this at this point?
I would like you to review the document that you sent and kind of talk about that from where you stand on Best Western side. I think it's really interesting. That's great information they've shared. And the company that they use, Tourism Economics, is also the group that our county uses for all of our research as well.
Let me do my best and share the screen here and see if this works. Can you guys see that? Okay. So just to preface this, we operate 5 hotels. 4 of them are independent. 1 is a flag with Best Western. Best Western International has been around for decades and decades. They provide, you know, quite a bit of financial guidance. Preface that this report now is a couple weeks old, and this is a very fluid situation that we're all in. I did, you know, get the most recent STAR data. There is a new STAR report coming out, you know, for the U.S. market today in a couple hours. But this is the most recent information from Best Western and from STAR as of about a week ago. Just to forewarn you, it's a little gut-wrenching, but here we go. So total travel industry impact as what Best Western International is predicting for the spring market, $910 billion economic loss. And that's a $400 billion in direct travel spending and a decrease of 5.9 million in employment loss. And that's a loss of 4.7 million direct travel jobs. They're predicting that job losses will spike in April and May, and 52% of all travel employment will be down before May. That equates to a 7.1 unemployment rate. Resulting from the travel-related job losses alone. And that impact is 7x the impact of 9/11. How that equates to the federal, state, and local taxes is a decrease nationwide of $62 billion. They have some additional information if you want to go on to ustravel.org. They've got facts, latest news, et cetera. GDP growth, if you see this red line second to the right, that was the Great Recession back in 2008, which averaged out to about a 10% decrease. This quarter, they're forecasting about a 26% decrease. So, you know, the economy, the U.S. economy has never seen anything like this. Gross domestic product growth, without the virus, they had predicted it to be about 1.7%. It's gone down. The predictions are 1.9 percentage points. And March was at about negative 0.2. April, they're predicting is going to go down another 2.9 percentage points. Which would be negative 3.1. Roughly 30 million jobs are predicted to be lost. You can see that the red are the higher risk, and then the blue and yellow are somewhat lower risk. And the highest risk section, obviously, are accommodation and food services. All of this is likely to get a surge in unemployment up to about 12%, but there's pretty much across the board reductions. You know, in addition to the hotels, we manage about 750 rental units from industrial, shopping centers, office buildings, apartments. You know, what we saw in April, surprisingly enough, is that most of the residential apartment tenants were able to pay their rents. We've dealt with a lot of businesses. Office was about 90%. The retail, the shopping centers were about 50%. And the biggest pain seemed to be coming from, you know, businesses like physical fitness, yoga, dance studios, without saying restaurants. And we'll talk a little bit more about the hospitality sector as we go on here. Hourly employees are hit the hardest. So both number of hourly employees working and number of hours worked by hourly employees has decreased by 60% in the past month. These are usually the employees like hotel desk staff, housekeepers, and maintenance workers. And I think, you know, without saying, if we don't have any occupancy, we really don't have any need for housekeepers to clean rooms. So that really is the segment that's getting hit the hardest. Just to thousand that a little bit more, the households with no emergency savings, the folks that are making less than $20,000 a year, 78% of them have no savings. When you get up to about $100,000 a year, about 38, maybe 36% have no savings in the bank. So you see that this hourly segment of workers that are the first to lose their jobs also have no reserves to rely on. The stimulus by the government, by Congress, has been unprecedented. You know, over about the two-year period of the Great Recession in 2008, they contributed $787 billion. The CARES Act in the first 100 days contributed $2 trillion. And I just got an email today that unfortunately, for small business programs, PPP and I believe the EIDL are now out of funds. So it's very important that we encourage our Congress people to pass another act to get more money into that fund to help the small business owners. U.S. travel impacts. The prediction is, including international and domestic travel, U.S. For this year, $400 billion will be lost. That is a loss of approximately $80 billion in international and $319 billion in domestic. Losses are already mounting. You know, as of the week ending April 4th, the STAR reports were showing RevPAR was 81.6% down as compared to this week last year. So again, putting this in perspective, this is our spring break. This is usually, you know, the spring season where a lot of the hotels make a lot of money. This is pretty comparable to the last 3 weeks. It's been about negative 80% comparing that specific week to the year prior. And all predictions are is that's probably going to be the new normal, at least for this month and for the month of May. This is one of the most important slides I think we can look at here. I've, you know, cross-checked this with the STAR forecast. You can see the losses projected for April and May is a drop in revenue of 87 and 86%. June, that would go to 82%. Per STAR, 665,000 of the 5.4 million rooms nationwide are now closed due to COVID-19. Of the 645 national submarkets, 100% have been negative for the past 4 weeks. There's not one positive submarket in the nation right now. This can be used for forecasting where we're going to go. On the right, I'm not sure if you can see that slide, but what Best Western is forecasting is a drop in revenue for 2020 of 58%. 2021 would be a drop of 21%. So putting that in perspective, if you've got a, you know, a single operator hotel that in 2019 made $1 million gross, you would expect to make about less than that. You would expect to make $420,000 in 2020 and about $790,000 in 2021. All knowing that, you know, the same expenses of minimum wage, insurance, utilities, mortgage payments would have to come out of those reduced revenues. Some of the other forecasts I've seen for STAR along the Central Coast was a little bit brighter than that. 2020 was more like 50%, and some people were forecasting 2021 at about a negative 11%. But I think it's safe to assume 50% drop for this year is likely where we're going here if we lose the majority of the spring and a good part of the summer season. For the week ending April 4th with STAR, looking specifically at different hotel classes, economy rooms had the best occupancy at 34.8%. That's about one in three rooms they're still renting. Mid-scale was 24.5%. That means they're still renting one in four rooms. Upscale was 15.8% occupancy, and luxury was all the way down to 9%. Many of the guests staying in these rooms obviously now are first responders, essential business operators, etc. But without a doubt, you know, the luxury market is getting hit much harder than the economy markets. They are predicting a rebound in 2021. I won't get too much into that right now. Looking at what is going on in other countries since they began dealing with the COVID impact. China has gone from below 10% occupancy in early February. It is now over 30% occupancy in April. It's going to be interesting to watch as the first responders are leaving certain portions of China and they're being replaced by tourists. Europe's occupancy was comparable to the U.S. at about 60%. At the end of February, Europe's now down to 7.7% as a whole as of last week, and the U.S. is sitting nationwide at about 21.6% occupancy. So we are doing much better than Europe. The graph here shows a decline of about 50% of international tourists this year, like we discussed previously. And that number should improve in 2021. So as a summary here, we're likely in the worst part of this crisis, we all hope, cross our fingers. The best prediction is that overall there will be about a 50% drop in room demand for 2020 as compared to 2019. Pain is going to be less for economy properties and worse for luxury properties. And the recovery will begin with leisure travel. Via auto, not many folks are going to be wanting to fly in the near future. It should be a good thing for coastal California markets like Morro Bay, but it's still going to be a rough couple of years. So that is all I had on that. So I think we want to open it up to a roundtable discussion.
Maybe you want to see if anybody has questions on your report really fast before we get into that.
Absolutely. Can I answer any questions?
Stephen, do you want to stop sharing your screen?
I'm trying.
Up at the top, it says.
It's kind of a nice image.
Thank you.
It's positive.
You should see a button that says stop sharing.
It's usually at the top.
There you go.
Great.
Wow.
Any questions on all that, guys?
Wow. That's all I can say. Speechless. But thank you. It was really helpful.
Jen.
I just had one question. I'm curious. I know Best Western has a lot of Middle America hotels. Have they done any sort of a breakdown of just like California-based Best Westerns out of that to see if the numbers are any higher than, you know, nationwide Best Westerns?
They did, and I think I actually saw that on the STAR report. There's some markets that are doing much better, you know, why Central California seems to be doing quite well. Markets around, you know, Disneyland, Hawaii are extremely low. They're about 3% right now. you know, why that is. You know, New York, for example, is doing very well. It's probably because there's so many first responders. So, the market fundamentals are different, I think, than any of us ever imagined and that we've ever seen. I'm not seeing, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of calls for first responders in Morro Bay right now. So I'm not sure if that answers your question or not. Okay. Any, Joan?
Yeah. So thank you very much for passing the information along. I've been reading and reading and reading and reading information, both in the Wall Street Journal and online and tracking. And what I've read is after the great lockdown is slowly lifted, the recession that's going to be caused in the travel industry in particular fits right along with the slides that you presented. They were saying that by the end of the year, by the end of 2020, we should be back about 45, depending on the market, to 65% of occupancy by the end of 2021 to the pre-great lockdown levels, which I think fits right along the line of something that Jennifer said, which was the reset, the great reset. So for Morro Bay, we can look at this as a burden, which it is, but we need to look at the opportunity also. And I think because we're such a strong drive market, there's going to be a pent-up demand for life, liberty, and the pursuit of travel. I mean, I know as much as I walk in Morro Bay and as picturesque and as beautiful and as perfect as our community is, mm-hmm. I would love to go to the snow and ski or do something a little bit different right now. And I think that a lot of folks are probably feeling that way too. They can't wait to get to Morro Bay and get maybe into the water. But with that reset, I think that some good things are happening. We have the opportunity to look at how we're realigning. I'm thankful for the Harbor Department that they made the Embarcadero one way for right now. But this is an opportunity, and since we have a council member listening, I'll say this really loud. This is an opportunity to really look at something that we've wanted to do as a community for quite some time, which is to make the entire Embarcadero one way and maybe draw out, have along the west side of the Embarcadero, the foot traffic going two ways. Because we have to remember that there's two big draws in Morro Bay. One is the beach and the other one is the Embarcadero. The Embarcadero itself is an economic driver and an economic opportunity for us. Every hotel you're sitting on this board has directed people to go down to the Embarcadero and have dinner. But if people aren't feeling safe because it's not social distanced properly, then they're not going to come here, or even more important, they won't come back again a second time. So if we can somehow take the street and make the street traffic one way and then use half of the street to make the pedestrian traffic two ways so that we still have the flow and then lanes going into the stores as we slowly reopen, we'll be able to have that feeling of freedom and access, possibly, that we want to give to our guests. And I am really concerned about the hotels. I have seen several of them closed. I see that there's one car in the driveway and it's likely the manager's car in the mornings when I walk. And so I am really concerned about what steps we can take. And I'm so glad that the city is communicating so well to everyone right now. So what the information that Stephen put forward, if Stephen can, I don't know, somehow keep any Best Western information like that coming and have it funnel through Jennifer to the board and maybe through Erica Crawford out to the rest of the community, that would be great information for the restaurants to see, because the hotel customers don't eat dinner in their guest room. They go out and eat in the restaurants. So they need to know when this is going to come back too.
Thank you, John. Let me just say that my takeaway from everything I've read and the research, and, you know, obviously I've got a lot of motivation to keep up on this thing, is that my recommendation to Morro Bay, to the city council, you need to do everything you can to reduce expenses right now.
Oh, yeah.
Without an industry-specific bailout for the hospitality market, a lot of these independent properties are not going to make it. You know, we went into this, we thought it might be a couple weeks or a month. It's not. You know, postponing TOT payments, postponing property taxes, you know, if those are not going to be postponed for a year or 2 years, I don't see how these properties are going to pay those back. So that's my concern for the city. The lending market right now is non-existent for hotels. Oh, you know, even if somebody wanted to sell their hotel and they wanted to get a loan, it's going to be nearly impossible this year and likely into 2021. So there's going to be properties that fail. They're going to come back on the market. They're going to be reassessed. So your property tax bases are going to go down too. So that's what they're getting. Playing this all out economically, we really need to sharpen our pencils and see where we can cut expenses, not only on TBID, but that's my recommendation to the Morro Bay City Council.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I can tell you that lenders are falling out all over the place, including regional lenders, regional all the way up. They are not interested in commercial lending right now. And it's a, expenses have got to be lowered in order for these businesses to make it. I've talked to a couple of restaurateurs down on the Embarcadero, and they basically say that if things don't get open by, you know, May 15th or May 20th, they don't know if they can open on June 1st. They may not be the ones there. It might be the city having that building. And that's really, really scary, because what happens is when we go to open back up, if we don't have anything to open up, we're a ghost town. When we say we're open again, we need to have functioning businesses that are there to be open, that remain. And I agree, one of the keys to that is going to be really lowering the expenses, and not on a short term 30 to 60 day window. The window has to be much greater than that. And boy, this is a city itself. I understand the city economics, and I'm not talking about the private industry economics. Now I'm talking about the city of Morro Bay, city budget economics. And it was very, very tight to begin with. The city council is faced with really, really dire straits here. And sorry, Red, I see you over there. And I feel for the city council. They are faced with a dire situation. Do we say, on one hand, they have to save the city somehow, right? The incorporated city. And on the other hand, there's businesses. And the balance of that, how do you balance that? What's the right numbers? And I think we've got to get some really smart people sitting down and figuring this out, because, you know, maybe it's somehow, I don't know exactly what it is, but it's got to be all expenses across the board. That includes TOT, TBID, water and sewer, working with the electricity companies to keep the lights on at these hotels. It's really, really important that everyone gets together on this, not only for the survival of the private industry, but for the survival of the city.
Absolutely. And I think what would help the hoteliers too is, you know, I know that TOT was, the late fees for TOT were suspended, I believe, for a couple of months. Scott or Red, you could confirm that. But I think what would help them is, what if they aren't paid? What happens? Is it a lien that's placed at that time? You know, with the question for the county, if the property taxes aren't paid within 60 days, what happens then? Is it a 10% interest rate? I mean, because these are questions that are going to come up.
Yeah, there's children running in the background. Sorry. Yeah, great question. I can't answer the county question. As far as TOT, if we don't receive them in August, there will be penalties. That's how it's written right now, and that's what was adopted by council. Joan and you all bring up a lot of really good points. It's a balancing act, and I see Erica is also on this call. We're working very closely with the chamber to try to figure out how we can assist our local community with the resources that we have. We're doing direct outreach to the leaseholders and subtenants of our leaseholders down on the waterfront, since we are a landlord and there are eviction protections in place established by the governor, and our council certainly supports those. So we have to try to do what we can. As Joan mentioned, the city finances is directly tied to the success or failures of our local business community, and our local business community has been gutted by this. We're doing the right thing. We're saving lives. As Steve mentioned, Morro Bay probably has one of the best health rates in the entire country. So we're saving lives, and that's something we can't forget with all of this. We're all experiencing significant economic pain, but we're doing the right thing. And if you look back to the Spanish flu, the cities that survived and thrived following the Spanish flu were those that went into lockdown early and stayed in lockdown and were resilient to begin with. And I think that describes Morro Bay and this county as a whole. So we are primed to survive this, but it's going to be 2 years, 3 years of really tough choices and pain. The city's finances are tied again to the success of our tourist industry, for better or for worse. And we've already made decisions like council and mayor waiving their stipends. The city manager department has taken 8% cuts. Our management team taking 5% cuts, working with three bargaining groups for them to take similar measures. We're working with Carbajal to see if we can get some money to smaller cities and open up more money for small businesses. I know Erica's working very hard on behalf of the chamber and the business, full business community, not just chamber representatives, to help with that effort as well. We're looking at our general fund reserves, which is 3 months of operation. Like you, Steve, we were hoping this was a 2 to 3 week deal. It's going to be more like 2 to 3 months, maybe more. Our operation is 3 months. That's how much we have in reserves. So we have to spread that out over several years, just like businesses. Otherwise, we'll go bankrupt. PERS is waiting, chomping at the bit to raise rates on the rest of all the cities because they lost $60 billion last month on the market, which represents about 20% of their fund. So we're looking at those kind of things, and it's going to be a full court press of all those efforts and looking at beyond that potentially layoffs. We already let go of 74 part-time and temporary staff, mostly in our recreation department, but also, as Jen indicated, within the tourist department as well. So nothing is off the table here. But we do have to provide those core services as a city. Otherwise, there's no purpose to exist anymore. And I think we all know if you compare quality of life here to those cities that are unincorporated or towns that are unincorporated, we know we're better off with local representation. But, that's sort of my point here, is just to say we realize there's a balance involved, and we want to work very closely and have been working very closely with our business community.
Absolutely. We appreciate everything, Scott, that you've done and the city council's done. Just really analyzing the numbers, and I appreciate, the efforts, but I think people are going to either pay it or not. So in support of the city, I wouldn't recommend, not charging late fees on TOT any longer. I think the city needs that money, to be honest with you. And again, short of a federal bailout, I don't see how a lot of these businesses are going to turn around. So I would, all of us on this call should encourage their congressperson to, pass further federal stimulus, especially for the hospitality markets. They passed it for the airline industry. I think the hospitality markets definitely need it as well. Nancy, you had something?
No, I was just giving a thumbs up to what you were saying.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay.
Steve, do you want me to contribute a little bit just from the chamber side?
Yes, Erica, yes. Thank you.
Yeah. So, sobering is the word du jour. It's wild. It's the tension that I'm experiencing between the absolute righteous need to protect public health and then the absolute failing of the federal government to help the hospitality industry and accommodations, food services. It's shameful the way that the PPP and the EIDL have essentially failed. I mean, there are a few success stories locally of people receiving PPP, but the rollout of that program, I understand it was rolled out in 7 days. I understand it's challenging and we're in an unprecedented moment, but it's not working. And so we have talked, I'm in a weekly call with Reach, which is the former Hourglass Project, and they've done a good job of getting us, about 100 community leaders in the region, connected to elected. So Carbajal is on the call often, Senator Monning locally, Assemblyman Cunningham. And what our congressman is saying is that there's this, you know, CARES 2.0. And I was reading an article that I read a lot too, Joan, you know, that now there's some infighting on how to distribute those funds. There's some data coming out that some of the early relief programs have disproportionately benefited industries that are not accommodation and food services. So I think pressure and continuing that pressure, I think Congress is back in session on Monday, the 20th. But to speak to the tension, if federal government is failing industry, how can we work to dim, you know, that to go in reverse on the dimmer that we shut down business and maintain public health? So we had a governmental affairs committee meeting and Jen was on that call, Scott, all of the department heads from the city with our chambers, governmental affairs, and some of the leaders in the business community here who are multi-industry, because Reach is, and the county is, working with Reach on contract to help with the recovery effort. So it's relief, recovery, reopening. So we assembled a smaller working group to be able to kind of map out what a gradual reopening looks like and what's tenable. You know, if it's going to be 50% occupancy for restaurants, is that tenable? Can they do that? Is it worth it for them? And some of the outreach that Jen's been doing, which I'll be jumping in on today for the waterfront leaseholders, you know, I agree, Joan. It's scary to think that some of those could be vacant once we do open up again. And the city does have quite a burden as the largest landlord in the city to set an example and to make sure that those businesses are preserved. So, sobering. I apologize. I wish that I could be more upbeat, but it is very challenging. And I really appreciate the data that you presented, Steve, as sobering as it was. That's all.
Anybody else have comments? Terry, did you have something?
I was just going to say, this airport will eventually long reopen.
Terry, we can barely hear you. Could you get a little closer to the mic?
Sure. Can you hear me now?
That's better. Thank you.
I was thinking, as we look towards reopening, hopefully that won't be too long. It'd be nice to have some sort of a campaign ready to welcome visitors back, like Morro Bay. Thank you for coming back to see us. And also preparing the residents of Morro Bay to welcome these people back. I've seen, as you have, Joan, out walking around, people are almost afraid to make eye contact. They're nervous. And it'd be nice to, if we could somehow get people prepared that people are coming back, it's fine, it's safe, try to continue to do social distancing and do it in a safe way. But so people don't feel like, oh, I went to Morro Bay and residents there were, you know, giving me dirty looks, that kind of thing. When I did just go on my trip to the Pies, one of the nice things was, you know, Mexico has a bad rap for safety down there, has for a long time. And the people there were so welcoming and so nice, and not just restaurateurs and hoteliers, but the people walking down the street, the little old guy walking his dog to the children, looking at you and smiling, and it just makes you feel really welcome. So it would be nice if we just at least start planting the seed for that kind of attitude for when things do come back. So it's a positive experience for everyone.
Great. Thank you, Terry. What's the market like in the vacation rental industry right now? Is there?
Well, I canceled all my bookings to July because I'm using my house for a ICU nurse, a traveling ICU nurse is staying there right now. After July, all my bookings are still good, and I'm just canceled. So I think they're all kind of in wait mode. Now, Airbnb has been reluctant in funding people their deposits. I got an email yesterday from someone who has a booking in late May that I had to cancel, and they haven't refunded their money yet. So we're coming up with that kind of issue. And then that looks bad on me, but they're not getting their money back. So people are having problems with Airbnb. So again, looking forward, I would love to see if we could do more bookings, encourage vacation rental owners to do bookings through the city, let the city get the money for that booking rather than Airbnb, and let allow people to book directly through the city for vacation rentals, like they do at the hotels.
In other markets, I've seen vacation rentals being converted into monthly rentals. Have you started to see any of that there in Morro Bay?
I personally haven't. I would love to be able to have some sort of a list where I could be in contact with some of the vacation rental owners, maybe be able to blast to vacation rental owners to be able to get opinions, because I don't have that ability right now. So that would be really helpful. I would think there's a lot of people struggling that have vacation rentals only as a vacation rental property, not as a personal vacation home as well. Maybe struggling with mortgage payments and utilities and with no income right now. So they may be coming back in the real estate market. So that could affect our real estate market as well as these properties start coming flooding back on the market. Interesting to see.
Interesting. Thank you.
Steven?
Yes, Joan.
Jennifer, Terry just brought up something that's really hit home, which is when we do get to reopen, it is sobering. Erica is right. It's a sobering, striking, unprecedented situation. We're in the great lockdown, and what happens after this changes everything. But what happens after this is the unlockdown, right? The steps to the unlockdown that Terry brought up. And Jennifer, are you putting together a marketing plan based on an extremely reduced budget for the unlockdown to get guests back, having them feel safe in a very soft, I guess, fashion? Are you, I'm sure you're thinking about that. I know you, but can you give us an overview of that, or do you have a plan to present something to us at May? I don't know where we're at with that.
I'd be glad to talk about it. I was just waiting to go through all the round table, see if any other board members wanted to talk, but I can go into my slides and talk about it a little bit. What I'm really looking for today is your thoughts and your input, because I am thinking about a reintroduction plan and how does that work? And, you know, we've never advertised during summer. We've always coasted through summer, harnessed our money and spent it going into shoulder. And this is going to be an exceptionally odd year because every destination is going to be scrapping for every guest they can get. And so I think the spend in summer might be a waste of money because so many people, everybody's going to be going after domestic drive market. And so I want to talk about that as a group and get your opinion. And I don't think it's something that we would decide today. I think that And I would recommend that we probably meet every 2 weeks from here out, just do a quick call. And it doesn't have to be a two-hour call, but as the research comes through, I think we need to keep looking at this and see where the market is moving to and when it's going to open back up and kind of fine-tune it. But I'll go through, unless anybody else wants to give any thoughts, I'd be glad to go through my kind of economic recovery initial slides. Are you guys ready for that? Not ready for that? Okay. Okay, so let's see. Can you guys all see that? So, and this is not, you know, this is just a start. Keep that in mind that this is going to be an evolving situation. But this is all we're talking with, like Megan and I have had calls with Adara and with TripAdvisor, and we're talking with tourism and economics and Renaissance, all these different groups, and they're all giving different strategies and thoughts, and they're reviewing kind of as people are changing. And so these are kind of where we are as of right now, and this might change by our next call, but one of the big deals is really understanding what I'm calling the legacy behavior change, because as Joan and Terry both mentioned, people don't feel safe right now. And is that going to be the legacy change that's going to happen into tourism as we come out of this? And it's a very, I mean, it's a concerning thought that people are not going to feel safe. And it kind of, you'll see it trickles down through other thoughts that I have when you think about people not feeling safe. So we have to understand that, and that'll show in travel sentiment as we look at how people are at home and they're looking at where do they want to travel to next and how do they come out of this and feel safe to go back and revisit their favorite places. How will social distancing affect the tourism industry? And I talked with one restaurateur yesterday, and he's actually in the middle of putting up plastic barriers between his booths. He's reduced down his seats, and he's starting to concept how to do that so that when visitors come into the restaurant, they feel safe. So things like that, I think, are really interesting. And this legacy change, I think, will happen immediately when we are released to go back out. And it might last 12, 15, maybe even 24 months. And it'll gradually, you know, people will start feeling more safe and they'll start going back into what they're used to. But how do we make the visitor know that Morro Bay is a safe destination? And one of the biggest issues that I have with that is the idea of vacant storefronts. You know, if they come back into Morro Bay and half the waterfront is closed and papered windows, how does that make a visitor feel? They're not going to feel like this is an inviting and safe environment. And so Eric and I are really trying to work with the master lease holders and the sublease tenants and try to find out, you know, what do they need and how do we keep them in place? And not that her and I can resolve it, but we can kind of, we're trying to get a overall opinion of what would that balance be that they need to stay in place. And then hopefully we can present that to Scott Collins, and maybe there's something there that the city can step up and we can kind of figure out. It's a very concerning situation thinking about so many storefronts being vacant. And then the second part of that is, and we have not gotten into this yet, but I think the idea of if we have significant amount of storefronts vacant, what do we do with those? You know, and so Eric and I need to put together a plan of, do we take these to city council and say, let's put up pop-up shops in these so that during summer months, when our tourism comes back, that these stores are full, even if it's on a temporary basis, to show that we are inviting, that we are an active community and it's safe to come in. So there's a lot that needs to go into that. It's a very, it's kind of a daunting task, but it's a really critical thing for us to do. Some of the other things that I'm kind of working on, I talked with Eric Howell, who is Coastal Commissioner. He's actually Pismo Beach City Council as well. And he really gave us some great ideas. And we were talking about, conceptually, what I wanted to talk with him about was, what are the things that the Coastal Commission might look at allowing individual cities to take on for this immediate season recovery to help income that would not impact California coastal communities on a permanent basis that they would be comfortable doing. And so we talked about paid parking, and we made great grounds on that. And I know that Scott Graham is trying to figure out how he can do that, but he said, you know, they'd be totally open to looking at converting, you know, current spaces into paid parking. And so we could probably get some income through that. And so he gave us great ideas on that. He also talked about there's, you know, money that's been set into an account anytime a water or coastal property has to be built, they put these fees into a mitigation fund, and none of those fees have been used for years, and they're just sitting there. And so he said, you know, there's no reason why we can't look at using those mitigation fees for either upgrading or retrofitting a like a motel or a downtown property, or even possibly like the property that's looking at being built over by the high school. I mean, what bad timing for them, right? And it was like literally the day before they went to city council and got approval, and the next day all this started happening. So the change on that would be if a property wanted to use mitigation funds, they have to be considered a low cost accommodation, or is it a percentage of the rooms that need to be considered a low cost accommodation? So we're trying to look into that and see how that would look, but the ADR is $120 a night. So for some downtown motels, that actually would be a reasonable thing to look at possibly. And that might help make our kind of our waterfront or our hotels look a little more inviting. We had a call a couple days ago, and this information is not completely new. They did the survey the last day of March. So it's, you know, things are changing quickly, but I want to share this because I thought it's really interesting. So they surveyed about almost 2,000 people, and these are the response that TripAdvisor got back, that 30% of the visitors are planning on rescheduling their trips, not canceling them. And then as far as how soon they want to travel, 34% said they want to travel between 1 and 4 weeks after the pandemic is finished, and 29% said 1 to 2 months after it's finished. And in all, 91% total of the respondents said they feel very comfortable traveling domestic within 6 months after COVID. So I thought that was really good. The interesting thing for me, and I think you guys will kind of agree, the idea of those early people wanting to travel, I think we're probably looking at more of a millennial traveler because they are not, they don't have that fear. You know, they're like, let's go and let's get out there. So that might be what we're looking at more, which is a different, slightly different market for us. 63% of the total respondents said they would feel comfortable traveling within 2 months of COVID, which, I mean, that's pretty substantial. That gets us into hopefully July. Hopefully this will come out in May is what I'm really hoping for. And so most of these people, what they want is they want to travel either road trips or outdoor adventure. And both of those fit perfectly into what Morro Bay has always pushed and what our county has always pushed, which is really nice. So 59% said they want to take a road trip. 48% say they want to do outdoor adventure. So my question to all of you, and this is kind of what I want to talk about, is how does Morro Bay react and pivot to that thought pattern? If we're looking at people wanting to road trip and do outdoor adventure, and they're most likely going to be millennials that want to be first into the market, first out of their homes and back into traveling, most likely those people are, they're going to be the people that want to camp, right? I mean, that's my gut on it, is a lot of those people will be campers. And so, you know, I look at the county messages, you know, they use road less traveled, wide open spaces. Those all play very well into our county. And so I think we should probably get back into doing, you know, blogs and really social posts that talk about that thought pattern and start, you know, once we're ready to, like in May, start really pushing that thought pattern. Terry, just to talk about VRs a little bit, I have been calling several of them, and I'd be glad to give you the list and have you call as well. That would be fantastic. I've had residents call pretty often, usually one a night, you know, giving a complaint about a VR. And so we've been tracking those down and see who they're renting to. Probably half of those have been non-licensed VRs, and the other half were out-of-state owners, and they were unaware of what was going on, and so they have complied. So we've had good response from the owners that are now complying with allowing those to be for healthcare or family workers. So going back to the idea of millennials traveling, what do they, you know, what do they want? If we're looking to, I guess here's my concern, and I'm sorry, I'm kind of brainstorming with you guys, so excuse me if I'm kind of skipping all over, but this is such a changing process. And I'm kind of caught between the idea of millennials want to come back in, and let's just use, for example, let's say May 1st, we start getting this slow dimmer switch turned on and we start being allowed to open up different things. My gut is obviously hotels are going to be one of the first to open up because we've already been opened as an essential service for workers and family taking care of elders. So my other gut is that state parks will probably be held off for a while, and they probably will not open immediately. And for millennials, you know, they want that freedom to come and go when they want. They want experiences like no others, and they want to have adventure when they travel. So here's my question to all of you. Hold on, let me move it. Is with state parks opening secondarily, could the Morro Bay motels, like the smaller motels, be primed for capturing visitors that want to experience that van life? And would that give us just the jump start ahead of other destinations to capture those visitors before our normal June market is ready to start traveling again? And so I'm not looking for a permanent change. I just want to throw out the idea of, is there an opportunity for like self-contained overnight campers to come in, you know, these millennials that want to bring their van again up and stay in a market, and we could we collect TOTs for maybe it's two spots at a hotel that allows for them to camp in the parking lot? And that would give us two things. It would jumpstart ahead of what other DMOs are doing, because our state park will most likely still be closed. And it would start bringing a little bit of TOT back in to the mix. I don't know if you guys even like the idea or not. I don't know if I'm way out. Terry, you have a question?
Well, I have a comment on that, because I'm not a millennial, obviously, but I am about van life. So we have a van. We like to travel. And I think that's a great thing for hotels and motels to be able to offer, because most van life people are not necessarily the millennials, but there is a big surge in our age group as well with the Sprinter vans. And all they're really looking for is Wi-Fi access and maybe a hose to refill fresh water. So hotels could offer parking spots for, you know, $40 a night. I don't know what that rate would be, but to be able to refill water, Wi-Fi access, do all those things they need to do. It would be a great thing, especially while the state parks and those places are not open. Possibly give them access if there's a public bathroom, you know, to have in addition to their own bathroom, like obviously self-contained. So I think that, yeah, I think that van lifers love doing that kind of stuff. They're very open. A lot of them do stay in hotel and motel parking lots.
I know I've always seen a lot of kind of an interesting mix of families where we'll have like parents come in and they'll stay at a hotel, and then the kids will come in and they'll be camping. And, you know, this might be an opportunity to mix those two. You know, maybe the kids are coming in and then also the adults would be in a hotel room. I'm not looking for a permanent change. I'm looking for a way to jumpstart ahead of everybody else, because I started looking at like the basic things that, you know, everybody does, like package deals and offer golf and room and wine and food and all those things. And every destination is going to do that. And we have to find what is different about Morro Bay and what else can we offer. So
the great jump on point.
I'm just trying to like think out of the box. I don't know if hoteliers think I'm nuts or I don't know.
It's an interesting concept, Jen. I think, yeah, it's definitely worth giving it a shot. Let me just say, in Santa Cruz County, our beaches and parks were closed. They just opened them last night at midnight. And they're talking about now opening next week our golf courses, construction, and outdoor landscaping. With the thought that it's healthy for people to be outside, stay 6 feet away, and hike and go to the beach and things like that, too. So it wouldn't surprise me if your parks open fairly soon.
Are those county or state, Steve?
County.
So I think we're uniquely positioned because we have such a strong drive market to do something different. For me, I'm willing to throw anything at the wall to see what sticks to help get our economy back going again. I can see where doing the van life concept, and I know, Jennifer, you're trying to put it into hotels to see if they can get that auxiliary overflow of the parents into the hotel room. But if we did a campaign around, and I know Scott and Red are probably going to plug their ears on this one, but if we did a campaign around a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity this summer only to camp at the Rock in a self-contained vehicle, that, I think,
would do wonders for our restaurants and our retailers. That would be an amazing comeback. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. Summer of 2020, the COVID comeback only, or I don't even like the word COVID, but whatever positive, not the negative COVID. But I can see what Jennifer is trying to do there. Trying to get that auxiliary parent room is really important. So I'm not sure how to find the balance there, but I do think that the most attractive place to camp is a once in a lifetime, you know, arrow shot across the bow at the Rock. And working with, of course, the community members down there where you could park recreational vehicles that would still allow great access for our community members out there. Because, you know, I mean, I got to tell you, my boys understand that tourism has put a plate of food in front of them every day of their life, but they also are frustrated by not being able to park at the Rock in July and having to spend 20 minutes in parking to come home to get dinner, right? So, you know, there's that balance. So that, and I want to say, because we are a drive market, we're uniquely positioned for our comeback to happen a little bit earlier. I can tell you that my sister is a flight hostess for Southwest Airlines. Her route is Oakland to Maui direct. The last 2 weeks, she has not had more than one passenger on her flight. She sends me videos of her in the back doing the flight, you know, mask thing, and the flight host in the front doing the same thing, and they've got one passenger. And my son has a rental car agency over there, and he has 600 cars parked in his yard in Maui. Not a single rental. So maybe, we're pushing to come back.
Maybe it's, Joan, it's activating the entire town, because I think you're right. I think that would be really cool. But maybe the van life is kind of the thought process for all of Morro Bay, and, you know, plug it into different places, whether it's in hotel parking lots or, and I was kind of conceptually thinking, like, I'm still assuming May 1, maybe this is a something that the council would open up to be like May 1 through June 20th and fill that window ahead of when we're going to have our normal Valley people come back into town, because you know they're going to come. Yep. I mean, we know that. I know that they will come back. They're going to want the low-income rooms. I agree with Steve, but they definitely will come back. But I want to get ahead of everybody, because everybody's going to fight for those people.
You know, the other thing that we are is a Saturday and Sunday lunchtime drive market. So we get folks who come down the coast from Monterey to have lunch here. We get folks who come from Fresno just to come for lunch here in Morro Bay for fresh seafood. So the seafood industry hasn't stopped. The fishermen are essential. And showing that the fishermen are essential and that we still have that would also be terrific. I know that another important aspect is that Fish and Game, California State Fish and Game, just had a hearing. It opened up and they couldn't control Zoom. There were so many public commenters on the Zoom that they had to shut it down. But what they were trying to do was close recreational fishing for the entire year because of COVID. If we can get our city somehow to weigh in on that, because recreational, and Erica probably knows this, she's probably talked with Burgess and the other recreational fishing folks, they are really, really hard hit. I mean, their season is short anyhow, and to just cut it off at the knees here, it's going to be a huge impact to a community like us who get folks who bring their kayaks over and want a recreational fish here in Morro Bay. And that is some of our mid-range hotel rooms. They'll stay in your mid-range. They have expendable income. Some of those kayaks are $5,000, $6,000, and $8,000. They're not inexpensive. These are people with expendable income. We're not talking about just your $200 big box kayak. We're talking about some really nice kayaks and folks who can come here and spend some money. So I love where we're going with this, trying to bring the outdoors in. I hope that the big push works for us.
And I just want to jump in because I also like it. Thank you, Joan, for the tip off on the recreational fishing. I do know that the commercial fishing industry is in communication with Eric, and I've been looped in on some of the communications from them. They like to start selling off the docks in a sort of more organized way, which I think maybe feeds into this a bit. And I just wanted to offer that I do think it also feeds in if we are doing the dimmer switch and restaurants are still doing takeout and delivery, that this would fit in if it's a short window. This fits in with that model that they're already starting to kind of be used to, the modified normal. And maybe we could even get retailers in, you know, to do some sort of a puzzle, each blanket, whatever, picnic to go kind of a collaboration. I like the idea. I just wanted to share.
The last thing I want to say on an idea here is when I owned hotels, I stuck always in my mind with what my grandmother, the way my grandmother raised us. And her saying, we would come to the dinner table, she'd say, go wash your hands. Remember, cleanliness is next to godliness. And it seems silly, but when we had hotels, and especially when TripAdvisor kicked in, about the time that we were coming out of the recession, TripAdvisor became the big gorilla in the room. And people posting reviews frequently post about the cleanliness of a guest room. And if your cleanliness scores are very, very high, you are likely to recover from this much quicker than anyone else. And I think this is a reset button for hoteliers too, because I can tell you, we had some of the highest, my pride was in making sure that we had a top three hotel in cleanliness for the entire county or for the community that we were in. And that meant that our housekeeper spent at least an hour in the room. We had an hour of labor in each hotel room, which is really heavy. It's heavy in the hotel industry. But if I were in a hotel or if I were doing some type of marketing for the community, I would also somehow involve a cleanliness message. What are my 12 steps to cleanliness in my hotel? I would have it right on the front page of the website, and the same for my restaurant. As the menu popped up, these are our 10 steps to cleanliness. Those two things, your service and your cleanliness, will have to mirror each other. So what, with the hand washing stations that we put in, how are we getting that word out there also with the cleanliness of our public restrooms when we reopen, the cleanliness, I hate to say this, but people toss gum out of their mouth onto sidewalks. That's really an unsafe situation. How are we going to manage our city cleanliness and our individual ownership of cleanliness in terms of, you know, our bubble, whether it's a hotel or a restaurant, and how do we position that messaging as a group out to the rest of the world? Because if our town can come back cleanliness wise before anybody else in the county, we're going to reap dividends for that. That's just my personal thought.
I'm fairly certain, Joan, on a state level, there's going to be requirements for hotels here really quickly, whether that's plexiglass guards in the lobbies, obviously masks and gloves for the staff, maybe even, you know, leaving a room offline for 24 hours before it's reoccupied. So all of that is coming industry-wide. But again, I think the challenge is how do we pay a housekeeper to be in a room for an hour when our revenues are going to be down 50%. But I do have a question. How happy are you not to be a hotel owner right now?
Yeah, that's okay. You know, no worries. I'm not sure. I think it's okay to not be a hotel owner right now. I sleep at night, but I do worry about my friends and my colleagues like you guys.
Absolutely.
So I am very concerned about you, deeply concerned.
I think cleanliness is definitely a key ticket. And I think everybody's going to be on board that train as well. You know, we were seeing it when this first started before we were on lockdown. Every hotel company in the world was sending out emails about how clean they were and everything they had into place. So definitely will be a key point, and we'll definitely have to message it out. And I think we should message it out now to the hotels for them to start working on their TripAdvisor scores and see what they can do to appeal bad reviews and things like that. Again, it's individual owners, so we'll see how that goes. But I think that is a given. It'll definitely be part of it and done, but I think it's going to be what everybody does. And so I really want to figure out what is different about Morro Bay and what really separates us out. And I love the idea of, you know, once in a lifetime opportunity. So it's clear it's not going to be consistent or forever. And I don't know, Scott might want to weigh on that, because that's one of the things that we took away from our government affairs group yesterday, was to look at the possibility of camping, but that would be probably a permanent situation. I think if we want to activate the once in a lifetime opportunity, it should be a substantial dollar amount to be at the Rock. And then you're going to have the secondary people that no matter what, they still want to come, and they might look at dry camping and parking lots, because that's what happens. So people, they go to the state park, they get those reservations first. When those fill up, then they go to the private groups, and then, you know, they usually pay more at the private, but people want to come, period. So I think that's really, I think it's a really interesting way to go about it. I think it's something that we need to keep quiet, because our entire county could step up and do the same thing. So I just want to make sure that we, you know, make this, if this is going to be a priority for us, that we need to, obviously it's a public meeting, so it's probably going to get out there, but I think we need to do whatever we can to make this Morro Bay-based thing. We really go after it strongly and quickly, and see if city council will get on board with it as well.
Then what are you thinking timeline wise?
I think I need to get it done, Nancy, and have it in the bag ready. If council approves us to do this, because we don't know when it's going to open up, so that whenever it opens or whenever we're first told, you know, we can start accepting visitors into hotels or to overnight guests that are traveling, we need to be ready. That's my gut on it.
Yeah. Making sure that this is done in a very sensitive way to the residents of Morro Bay is going to be absolutely critical. And to Terry's point about, you know, helping people to become more welcoming again, it's the key here is that when people feel confident that they are being taken care of and that they are safe, and right now there is no way, we don't have the testing, we don't have these things that make people feel that they're safe. And I've been taking a couple of informal polls of local residents about how they feel about that there's a traffic jam of cars going up to Montana de Oro on weekends, and that there's a crush of people that aren't using social distance from one another down at the Rock on weekends. And residents are afraid, right? And they're afraid for a good reason. So making sure that this messaging is not tone deaf is going to be absolutely critical between this being successful and this flying back on our faces. And, you know, I think your idea is really good. I love it. I love that you're coming up with a creative thing, but don't put the economic need in front of the safety need of the residents, or it is going to blow up in our faces.
You've got a good point, Nancy. Over the past week or two, I've received, you know, a handful of very strongly worded emails and letters from residents with the opinion that hotels should be closed altogether in Morro Bay right now.
Yeah. People are very sensitive.
Right. So we just need to expect that and, you know, plan accordingly.
Yeah, you spend a little bit of time on Nextdoor and you see how many people are calling the police when they see two people walking down Panorama Street together. It's people are rightfully, they're taking this, we're glad that they're taking social distancing really seriously, because that's why we only have six cases that have been flat at six cases for 3 weeks. And, you know, they're really committed to it. And I think we should be proud of that and very, very conscious of their commitment to keeping Morro Bay healthy. And once we have the way to open up, and, you know, it's got to lead. The campaign has to lead with that. So that when they see people camping, you know, or stopping their camper, you know, to walk down to the beach, that they can be friendly to those people because they understand that we're taking care of them.
Great, thank you, Amish. You usually have some of the best comments. What is your thoughts on all of this?
Given the information that I've read about and different webinars I've seen, the timeline that I'm looking at currently is in the next 18 to 24 months. And that's really going to start as soon as the shelter in place orders are lifted. I definitely agree that people are not going to be confident in traveling or going about anywhere, whether in the US or internationally, until a vaccine is found. But until the shelter in place orders are lifted, I'm giving it a minimum of 18 to 24 months till people feel comfortable. I think at this point, personally, I'm trying to look at seeing if, I've heard a lot of people are transitioning their hotels into office spaces. People are at home, the kids are at home, homeschooling is happening. Either the wife or the husband's making noise, and it's really hard to get work done from home. And a lot of hotels are opening up their rooms for office and or meeting spaces. And secondly, there are, I guess there's a really big opportunity right now. Everyone's home. Everyone's itching to get out. There's shelter in place orders all over the state of California, so you can't really leave anywhere. I think it'd be a good opportunity to look into staycations. People, I think it's been 3 weeks now since people left their homes. We still have restaurants open that are doing takeout. It's a good opportunity to kind of reinforce that fact of stay local, shop local. I believe if you do that, at least 80% of the money that's reinvested into local businesses would stay locally, because people would, it would pay the workers that work here locally, they'd shop local, and kind of trickle down that way. But yeah, those are just a few thoughts that are running throughout this whole conversation. After looking through your, I guess, Best Western numbers, it just kind of, I agree with them, but they, I think we're looking at a longer timeline here. And I do agree with the camping. Idea of bringing in visitors to camp at Moore Rock, but I think there does need to be something that is brought in sooner than that. And I don't know whether it's staycations or trying to open up office spaces, but something needs to happen a little sooner than later.
Great, thank you, Amish.
Hey, Scott, are you still on the line? Scott's still on there. I'm wondering, I think you can probably rent for office space now because it's for resident use. So you should be able to do that now as individual hotels.
Sorry, kids are in the background again. Yeah, I don't think that's a, I don't know if that's a problem. I mean, if it's, but that's a good question. I can ask the county.
I love your staycation idea. I mean, everybody's crawling the walls of their own homes, you know.
Yes.
And it could, that could be pitched at luxury. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know.
And it's really affordable now. If you take a look at the city's rates, I mean, they are pre, I'd say 20, or probably around 2013, 2015 levels right now. They're lower than our normal winter rates that happened this past winter. So it's very affordable to do a staycation if people in Morro Bay wanted to.
I think it's a great idea, because if they have a Morro Bay driver's license, we can clearly identify they're a Morro Bay resident, so we're not bringing people in, and we can, I don't know, Scott, if do we need to get that approved by a county as well, or can we put that into place, do you think?
Right now, the lodging industry is considered essential for that, those purposes that I've outlined, which are supporting our essential workers, supporting those who support essential businesses and operations, and those who are here to assist family members in need. So the strict interpretation
would say that that's probably not copacetic, but you know, I appreciate and applaud the creativity. And you know, if we're sort of going through this reopening discussion with the county, I think that is something we should put forward as an idea, see what they think.
Great. Thank you, Scott. Anyone else have any ideas? Isaac, do you have anything? Are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here. Not really off the top of my head. In terms of like TBIT tax and property tax, I guess modifying those and delaying those or anything, doing anything for those, is that all out of the question, Scott?
We don't control property tax. That's the county. The state, the governor is talking about allowing small businesses to hold back sales tax. I know that doesn't affect hotels or VRs, but that's also, it could be a massive impact on the city if they hold back sales tax for a year. Most of our businesses are small businesses. So the TOT discussion, council said, you know, February, March, and as your chairperson mentioned, if we go beyond that, then the city is pushing itself to the brink of bankruptcy, because we will not be able to manage on a cash flow basis, just as much as you are all struggling to do that as well. So I think it's, again, a balance that we're trying to strike. But an excellent question. But the property tax piece is entirely with the county.
And then my other question is, what do you guys have a timeline, or like, what are you guys looking for to reopen?
The county is entirely in charge. The public health officer is the one who established the shelter at home order, following the guidelines from the governor. So the public health officer is the one who will allow the reopening. Of course, there is input coming from the cities and our business community. But as the governor said 2 days ago, please be quiet. They don't listen to me, obviously. It's like my employees. Just kidding. The governor said that science and data is going to drive this decision, not politics and not the economy. So I don't think you have to read between the lines what that means. They care about our business community, but they are not going to let that drive the decision-making. It's going to be science and data. So I think they're going to allow for one more incubation period, which is 14 days, and then assess at that point a reopening. And that's why we want to have the reopening discussions now, because if we're able to open in 14 days or 28 days, we're not then deciding what to do. If that makes sense. But a great question, Isaac, and I wish I could give you a better answer. But I know what Santa Cruz County's done, as Steve alluded to, opening May 1st. I'm not so sure that's a good decision, but I am not epidemiologist, not a healthcare professional. They have really, really good staff at the county. So maybe they have good reasons to open that soon or start the reopening, but we aren't there. And I think we're about a week or two behind Santa Cruz, if I'm not mistaken.
Thank you.
I have a question for Scott, Councilmember Davis, and Jennifer. I'm sure you pretty much agree that there's a lot of hotels that could use improvements here in town. A lot that haven't really done anything to their properties and really don't drive tourism. Trying to accumulate my thoughts right now. Basically where I'm trying to go at is, do you think there would be any way with the delaying of collecting tourism tax to be able to reinvest that into improving facilities here in Morro Bay?
That's a good question. I don't think you want your council member to respond here in this forum, but I know he probably has some ideas. Yeah, I think it's a good question, Amish. And I know that, you know, cities like Palm Springs did this many years ago, and they said, you know, you will allow you to hold back half your TOT if you do certain improvements that can raise you up a star. And they went ballistic on that, and Palm Springs, you know, raise their game all across the board based on that program. That program existed prior to prevailing wage, of course, because it's in a government assistance program, you have to pay prevailing wage. So they take advantage of that prior to the law changing here in California. So that's a factor you have to consider. Instead of paying, you know, minimum rates, you're paying two or three times what you normally do for the labor to do that kind of work. But I think, again, the issue is here is cash flow for hotels versus investment in your properties, which I understand, plus, you know, the city just maintaining its core services. So I think that's a worthy discussion, and, you know, kind of interested to hear what the other board members have to say. And council will be looking sort of at a comprehensive view of the financial economic situation of our city on the 28th of this month. So, you know, if you have ideas as a group, it'd be good to hear them. And I again, applaud the creativity of mission to the whole board here.
Thank you. Yeah, I figured given the situation that hotels right now are pretty much sitting empty, doing any renovations right now would be the perfect time to do so. That way, when the economy does reopen, we have better products for our customers when it does come time to travel again.
And it's, you know, without a doubt, it's a great time to hire people too, or will be a great time to hire people. Having said that, I'll go back to my earlier comment. I'm just too familiar with the finances of the city of Morro Bay. And I think holding back TOT tax at this time is just going to severely damage them. I can't speak so much to the county of San Luis Obispo, and I'm sure I'll get a call and an email, but I would lean towards personally holding back property tax rather than the TOT tax to the city of Morro Bay at this time.
Scott, you said, and I believe you said, April 28th is going to be a meeting where the city council relooks at the finances. So I'm assuming that Jennifer Calloway, the finance director, is working diligently on a forecast of the impacts of this, of the long-term forecast, and what that means to a recovery budget in the next fiscal year. So would it be too premature to say in May, there might be like a preliminary TBID budget forecast for the 2020-2021 fiscal year for this group to look at?
Great question, Joan. No, I think that's probably right on target. The 4/28 meeting is a, where are we today? What information do we know? And sort of what are we projecting for this last quarter and then moving into next year? The intention is to come back to the board, this board in May with some budget discussions and obviously the renewal process for the TBID. So I think we'll have better numbers than I have today, but our just off the cuff analysis that we're sharing with our bargaining groups is that we'll lose about $2 million in the last quarter between sales tax and TOT. Just as a reminder, our total general fund budget is $15 million. So that's almost 10%. And then we're looking at up to $4 million of lost revenue, maybe more for next fiscal year, which represents about 20%. So we have to, again, we'll have to make really hard decisions as a city to make that work and prioritize our services and do a bunch of other things. So we're hoping to come to you all in May with better numbers. I think at this point we can expect that if Steve said we're going to be down to 50%, you know, as an industry, then it tends to reason that EBIT would also be down 50% or more, you know, this going into next year.
Right.
Yeah.
Jen, how many hotels in Morro Bay are now closed? Do we know?
Jen, do you have any idea? You're on mute, buddy. No.
I don't have a number off the top of my head, but there's several that are. But most of them are trying to stay open. A lot of them are owner-operators, so they can stay open. I can get an exact number if you want, breakdown on it.
Okay. I'm just curious.
And we do know that the inn at Morro Bay is closed fully. So that is sort of a sign of the times.
They were in the middle of a renovation, correct?
They were, but I don't think they intended to close.
Right.
They didn't start.
Lay off their entire staff.
Yeah, they haven't started. All their containers are sitting full. The last conversation I had before the day before they closed was they had only received 75% of their containers because they're being shipped internationally. And that's why they hadn't started on their remodels. So I doubt they've started.
Oh boy. Yeah. Okay. So then Scott brought up another thing, which was the renewal of the bid itself. And we had, as you all know, our annual TBID stakeholders meeting canceled. Are we just going to send a report, send the written report? As a city, is the city going to send the written report out to the stakeholders now instead? Is there any information the information needs to get into their hands prior to the 30-day hearing time opening?
Yeah, the requirements is not to have an annual stakeholder meeting. The requirements is to have the quote unquote annual report, which is six criteria, establishing the boundary, establishing who within the boundary pays, how much, what the budget is, what those will be used for. That's the strict adherence to the state code. And we will follow those. The annual stakeholder discussion was blown up by COVID. So I think we can just replay Steve's very uplifting message earlier for everybody so they see what we're up against. That would be the annual report or stakeholder report if I had to say that's the sobering message that isn't going to change for some time. But we will follow the strict adherence of the state code with regard to the process.
So are you going to send that directly to all the stakeholders or are we just going to post it somewhere? Do you know?
Yeah, I would assume we would do our best to figure out how to get to them so it's easy and painstaking process for them to make a decision about, protesting or not.
Okay. And then I guess the next question is, will it come before the TBID? Because in talking to some hoteliers about town when I'm on my walk, social distance talking, by the way, I want to throw in for everyone. As we social distance ourselves and have conversations, I have been hearing from some hoteliers that now that the county is up to 1.5% and they're feeling the pains of COVID, that they might, and I'm not recommending this, but they might be interested in a reduction of percentage here locally to give them some relief on fees somewhere. Although I hate to see any marketing budget cut, especially in times when you're trying to come back, I hope that isn't the decision they make. Is it going to come to TBID for that discussion so that people will have time to comment on all those, all the parameters for the bid itself?
Yeah, we have to go. Well, I don't know if we have to, but we're going to TBID in May for that discussion. So if people want to discuss going to a lower assessment, that's on the table. I wouldn't recommend it. We're already at a disadvantage to our local competitors, and we are going to be depressed significantly, probably by 50% or more, which means we'll have $400,000 in our budget. Part of that's administration. That means you probably have about $200,000 or a little bit more for marketing. So if we cut that more, that's just hurting ourselves. So that would be my emphatically strong recommendation is not to mess with that this time, but it will be that is what you as a TBID board would be recommending is the assessment rate.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else? Well, again, everyone, I would just encourage us all to work together. I mean, the pain is going to be across the board, and the worst thing that could happen is to have vacant hotels and vacant storefronts for a year or more. That's not going to help anyone. We've got on here review the mental marketing reports for March and April. Is that?
I don't think we need to review them. Megan was just going to kind of share how we've changed that. If you want to just get a quick review of how she's changing those now that we're doing them in-house.
Yeah, so Jen talked a lot at the beginning too about how marketing is looking currently. So
Megan, can you turn up your microphone slightly? Thank you.
Yeah, I can get closer. Does that help?
Yeah, it's really quiet for some reason.
Yeah, you just have to yell.
Oh gosh. Okay. Hello?
Perfect. Just like that.
Perfect. Jennifer talked at the beginning about some of the changes that we are making, obviously, in terms of marketing. As far as the reports going forward, we're going to be focusing more on economic forecasts and the marketing reviews. So we're going to look at SEO, what people are looking for and how early they're looking for it. And some of the conversations that we've been having with Adara and organizations like that are going to help to form that, but they will start looking a little bit different. It won't be marketing and PR reports like you've been seeing in the past. And obviously at the moment, we're pushing everyone to stay at home and we are using our owned media, so social and stuff like that to keep people in the loop and do the lives as Jennifer is talking about, that sort of thing. So the reports will start to look a little bit different going forward.
Super. Thank you, Megan.
Of course.
If there's nothing else, declaration of future agenda items. Does anyone have anything?
I do.
Gary?
I'd like to request a future agenda item for advocacy for reasonable short-term vacation rental regulations.
Stephen, we need to do public comment on this item.
Sorry. Apologize, Terry.
Okay,
we're going to open it up for public comment if there is some.
AGP.
Yes, hello there. Sorry about that. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Sorry, what was it?
Do we have any public call-in?
I am not seeing anything, no.
Okay, nope. Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
So declaration of future agenda items. Terry, can you repeat that, please?
Item for advocacy for reasonable short-term vacation rental regulations. We've been asked for TBID to get involved and give recommendations for the new rules that are being proposed for vacation rentals.
If I could jump in, thank you, Terry, Scott here. There was a request at the last TBID meeting, was that February, Jen? A member of the public came and asked for the board to consider a future agenda item, at which point it wasn't necessarily not support for, but I think there was a discussion with the board to say, let's wait and see if Terry's able to attend and then, you know, see what she thinks. And so I just want to remind the board of that. And the city has been working with a subcommittee of residents, including one of your very own board members for quite some time. That started in October, and we were making really good progress. We got some crystal clear recommendations. There wasn't 100% support for all of them, but nonetheless, some really good work done by that committee. And then we were going to work with our city attorney to turn that into an ordinance and bring it to the Planning Commission in April. That's looking more like the end of May that we would have it to the Planning Commission, or June. So this provides the TBID the opportunity to maybe consider looking at those recommendations in May next month and seeing if you want to weigh in on anything there. But it's not required through the process, but it's certainly because it's part of the part of your team now, the VRs are, it is something to consider.
So just to clarify, Jen, are we going to have these meetings twice a month now, or is it just going to be every month like it has been?
We'll have our standing meeting as we always do. And then I think I'll try to call special meetings, and I'll do them as information comes forward. So I'm not just scheduling a meeting to have it. So as we get updated surveys or just changes that are happening that would impact us, I'll go ahead and call a special meeting. We'll just do them short, maybe half hour, just to inform you guys on what's going on. And
that's
okay. And we do have to take a vote for Terry's future agenda item if we want to put that on the agenda.
Do we need a second?
You just need a concurrence with a majority of the board for it to come back. You don't need to have a formal vote.
Okay.
I'm okay with it.
Me too. Sounds good.
Agree.
Isaac?
Okay. I agree. Yeah. So we'll bring it back in hopefully in May. Again, the city attorney is working on that, his office is, but they've also been maxed out on the COVID response. So our goal is to try to get it back to this committee in May.
Okay, perfect. There will be, as I mentioned, another STAR update here in about an hour or two. I'll send that to Jen, and then, you know, if it's worthwhile, we can distribute it to TBID from there.
Okay, and then I had just mentioned again that we, and this is not a future agenda item because this is a subcommittee that I'm on, but I can't remember who's on the subcommittee with me, so if you are, raise your hand. On the TOT, who was on that subcommittee with me, with us, Jennifer? Was that Charlie? It may have been Charlie.
It was Charlie and Jen Keller. I just don't think we have the bandwidth right now to be doing that. I mean, I don't think I'm going to be able to do the document that Liz used to do the graph report on TOT, at least for the next couple months until we get through this a little more. We might have to just be dependent on our form that comes from the accounting office.
So is there a possibility for us to just get the straight STAR report then printed?
Yeah, you should all get it. You should get it through the county in your email blast. If you're not on the county emails, go on the county SoCal website and ask for the emails.
But I mean, include it in our packet so that we can discuss it.
Sure.
Is it possible for us to just get the straight STAR report instead?
Sure.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay, everyone, if there's nothing else, we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting. It is 10 after 11. You all have a better week, and we slowly start recovery here soon.
Yeah.
So meeting adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Be well.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.